Welcome to episode 224 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganville, and today my special guest is NYRA's very own Matthew DeSantis. Me and Mac over three races from this past Saturday from Belmont at the Big A. Those races were 6, 7, and 9, and some angles that we talk about are why form is so important when it comes to the handicapping process, and also why Charlie Appleby is suddenly becoming a new version of the other Chad. This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this tugboat. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me what we do this for. We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. And now let's welcome in my special guest for this week's edition of Redboard Rewind. If I'm talking NYRA, I'm talking with mostly two people from NYRA at this point. It's either Sarah Elbawi, but we have Matthew DeSantis tonight. Matthew, what a pleasure to have you on. Great to have you on to talk about some, we want to talk some turf racing today, which I thought was super fun. And how have you been? How was your derby?
Well, Spencer, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. Real pleasure to talk with you. And yeah, man, things are going great. Derby was a lot of fun. I was on Catching Freedom, and I made the joke that, you know, I was a former political science professor, so of course I had to pick the horse that was sired by Constitution. And, you know, it was, you know, not a bad pick. I mean, he ran his race. He was fourth. He kind of went through that same hole that Mystic Dan did, just not quite good enough to get up there with the top three, but incredibly thrilling finish, obviously. And, you know, it was a really fun day all the way around, and a lot of great performances, a lot of great races. So, you know, excited to do it again, obviously, coming up here with the Preakness, and then just in a few more weeks, Belmont at Saratoga. I mean, it's just one hit after another this time of year.
It's hard for people who don't understand, even if you're just like, not like us, like podcasting and working in the industry, but just the handicapping in general. It's, I kind of almost call it like the mini Saratoga before Saratoga, where there's so many big cards back-to-back weekends, and even this card in between, stacked in between. We have, what, 3 stake races, 11 races? Like, there's no easy cards right now in the month of May, for sure.
No, absolutely not. I mean, everybody's loaded. And, you know, obviously that Churchill card was huge across the 2 days, the Oaks and the Derby Day cards. And then you're right, like the card we just had up here this last weekend was a really big card as well. And it was, you know, one that a lot of these horses are going to use their efforts from Saturday to prepare themselves for the Belmont at Saratoga Racing Festival. So, you know, obviously you see this with the Preakness as well. These horses are all kind of pivoting themselves to the next big thing. And it feels like we're just going from one big weekend to the next, to the next, to the next. And you're right. Once it gets up to Saratoga, then it's just every single week.
I've always said this for like kind of prep weekends like this was. These are the weekends that I think everyone kind of takes the weekend off of. It's between the two big weekends. They kind of just take a break. And listen, I get it. Sometimes you're fried. But these are the races where I think you have to at least, whether it's listening to my show, any show that recaps these type of races, you need to just, you know, have Formulator open, take your notes, take the lumps along with it if you lost, or take your wings if you won that weekend, and really focus in, because I can't tell you how many times I've lost today, but I'll win Belmont with a horse I lost with that same weekend in the preps 2 or 3 weeks past.
100%. Could not agree more. That's a great point. And you learn so much through these types of middle preps, you know, for something bigger coming on, particularly, I think, on the turf, because so many of these horses are just returning to the turf or making their second start. So you're seeing some new form in some instances off the bench, or you're seeing horses, you know, take a big step forward in their second start. And so you're starting to get a sense of where these horses are going to slot in these bigger turf races later in the year. But yeah, absolutely right that, you know, what you learn today is going to help you in 4 weeks at the, you know, Belmont Racing Festival up at Saratoga. So these are important weekends to pay attention to. Absolutely. 100%.
Let's talk about form a little bit since you brought it up. For me, form has always been something that I try to quantify in a much smaller type of bubble or nucleus, where I'm looking for, you know, if do they hit the board? When was their last win? Do they kind of go off form? Is it because they were off on the wrong surface? Was it, you know, did they get the wrong running style for a few races? How do you kind of quantify form? And for a beginning handicapper, what's a kind of, you know?
A lot of really good points that are kind of basic indicators for people who are beginners. I mean, just our fluctuations. I mean, the general approach that I have is a lot of times I'm willing to cross a line through the race that sent a horse to the bench and their first race back.
Okay.
And I'm willing to go, okay, maybe there was a reason. Maybe something went wrong in that race. First race back, a little rusty. So I'm willing to kind of draw a line through those two. If the rest of the form looks pretty solid, then I feel pretty confident that you're going to get a horse that is going to be, you know, pretty consistent. And I think there's a higher ceilings. And I think we talk about this with athletes a lot of times. Oh, this is a horse that, you know, this is an athlete who has a high ceiling, you know, or a high floor. And I think, you know, being able to try to find that in the form, like you said, sometimes horses go on and off form. And why is that? You know, are they getting run back a little too quickly? Is it a track they miss? Is it the track conditions in terms of a wet track or a soft track on the turf? You know, are they switching surfaces sometimes? You know, what's going on here that's maybe leading to some erratic performances? But seeing horses that have really high ceilings, but also wanting to find those horses, sometimes value horses that just have high floors. You know, sometimes you find a horse and maybe they don't win all the time, but geez, they're always around. And there's a horse actually that did well earlier in this card that we're going to talk about. We're not going to talk about the specific race, but 90% Maddie is a horse that just always shows up every single race, doesn't win very much, but always shows up. And it's just a horse that when you start looking at form, you just go, man, this horse is rock solid, super consistent. I'm going to use this horse in my tickets in some way, shape or form, because she's going to give me a little bit more value than maybe some other horses might.
I think you brought up such a good point there with horses that, you know, maybe they're 5 for 6 or 6 for 6 hitting the board and just they don't ever seem to go, quote unquote, go off form. But what usually happens with those types is you'll see, oh man, look at that. They started at 6 to 1 at the start of their little spree. And now they're, you know, sub 2 to 1, sub 5 to 2 every race. And those are the type of horses that if you get on them early, good, but then they kind of give you those hard decisions where, and this is where for me, it's kind of, you're not, it's hard even to take exactas for me. If I'm betting two chalky horses or the top two choices, I need at least $10 back for a buck. That's kind of just where I've looked at. If I can get 5 to 1 on it, it's kind of a steal for me. For me, kind of.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it's you're right. It's a tricky proposition. And really, if a horse isn't winning and is below 5 to 2, I better see a significant class drop, or they just caught a really soft field maybe.
Yeah.
Where you go, okay, this, I understand this price. And even at this price, I'm willing to take this risk for a horse that might win a lot. But you know, the horse that I was used the example of as one of these kind of reliable horses to use in something like an exacta is a horse like Happy Saber, who just made a career hitting the board and finishing second to really big name short price horses like Life Is Good and Flightline, but did it at like 8 to 1 and 10 to 1 every single time. And I can't tell you, I mean, there were definitely 3-4 occasions where I cashed out huge exacted tickets by just using Happy Saver underneath a very logical, overwhelmingly heavy favorite, and just leveraged that and got that 5 to 1, 6 to 1 payout.
I think too, another horse for me that I just remember from having just past conversations with PTF on derbies, et cetera, Gunavera in the classic division.
Oh, yes.
I mean, how many times can this horse run second or third at 20 to 1 before people are like, I understand. And listen, that's where the pools are different. And he's probably bet more like 10 to 1 in the exacta pools. But my God, I just cannot believe. I would just look at the race half the time and just be like, okay, Gunavera second. Okay, who's going to win the race? Oh, the 4 to 5 shot. Okay, I'm going to go cash the window now.
Well, you're exactly right. And, you know, and I think the other, you know, going back, circling back to kind of the initial question about form, I think one of the really interesting things is looking at the turf form in particular, because right now so many horses are coming back from long layoffs. And I know people get obsessed about trainer stats, and I do as well, about, you know, what trainers bring their horses back in good shape. We know people like Chad Brown and Brad Cox always seem to fire off the bench pretty well. Somebody like Shug McGahee, his horses usually take a race or two to run back into shape. But the reality is, a lot of times, if you look at the past performances, the horse tells you what they're going to do.
100%.
And you just go back and look, you know, what did this horse do the last time they came off the bench? Did they fire right away or did it take a race or two? And I think so many times you can get your answer to those questions by just paying attention to what the horse does rather than getting too obsessed about trainer angles.
And as well with trainer angles, there's so many times, you know, you can look down. And I know Andy hates the pages in the form that have the trainer stats and all that, but he'll say, you know, Chad, 30%. Well, is he 0 for his last 15? When it comes to bigger trainers, I want short samples. I know this sounds ridiculous, but if I know that Chad over his last 20 runners off 180-day layoff, you know, he's 1 for 20 or 5 for 20, but like the median win is only $5. He's supposed to win with probably 5 out of 20. And I think that's what people don't realize is, like, when you in this game are looking for value, you can bet favorites and that's fine. But I think to win at this game, you have to figure out what the right favorites are and to just eliminate the rest of them. Like, if you're trying to play, if you're going over a card, and then once it's like the Aqueduct Inner Dirt from back in the day, and you're finding seven favorites you like, you probably are overvaluing a couple and need to go back and look through. And for me, with the trainer stats, I need at least two wins in the last 10 races or so. And I can't tell you how many times just keeping track of it in a notebook. Oh, Mike Maker this week had four winners turf routing, and then the Belmont Stakes weekend happens, and he has three more at 10-1. And I'm like, okay,
yep,
I'll just take my $30 and three horses, and I'll go home for the day. And because they'll be part of the pick fives and everything, and everyone will still use that horse, but they'll end up getting knocked out by another logical favorite, and they make no money. And that's so, for me, it's like, I think when it comes to trainer stats, I think that people are so obsessed with them now at this point, it's almost as bad as the buyer figures.
It certainly can be. And I think a lot of times, again, there's not the necessary context of, okay, this you know, trainer is X percentage, but then you really need to dig in to go, because I remember there was a stat with like David Dugan at one point this winter at Aqueduct, and he was like 1 for 43 or something along those lines. It wasn't good. And you go back and you looked and you realized he only had one favorite during that entire stretch. And guess what? The horse won.
Yep.
And so, you know, sometimes, you know, those numbers can lie to you a little bit. And if you see a stat of a trainer looking either really good or really bad, it's worthwhile digging into where are those stats coming from in terms of horses that are, you know, overwhelming favorites. Well, of course, then they're going to be winning at a 30% rate. They should be. If the horses are 10-1, 20-1 long shots, of course the trainer is having lower numbers. Look at, try to narrow down those stats to look at how the trainer does when they have a favorite or a horse under 5-1. How do they generally run in those instances rather than focusing on the aggregate when you're kind of muddying up the data with a lot of 30-1 long shots?
One of the most underused things on Formulator is you can track wet track races. And for me, that helped me hit Diodoro about 6 times on MTOs one season at Saratoga. Like, and it was like at 3-1. Like, it was like, it was the most obnoxious stuff. And I'm just like, he hits like 80% in the money and it was like 25% winners. And I'm just like, he doesn't leave them in if they can't win. And it was just like, you could tell when he didn't want to run the horse in the wet, they would just scratch him right out immediately. And if it was him and David Cohen, I think it was more like 45%. It was just unbelievable. And I think that people, you know, we're going to talk about a horse later. For me, at least, the reason I stayed off compared to staying on and switching from a trainer who had 2 in a race. And I think that in turf racing specifically, and we're getting back to our whole form and then we can get into the races, beginning of the year with turf runners in form and out of form, I think that when they're finally bringing the turf back, just look at the top 20 or so trainers and just take notes on their turf stats. That's all you can do. That way you can kind of have an idea. And listen, if Chad Brown brings back 6 that weekend and 2-1 off the layoff, well, they're probably going to be better than the 4 who didn't. And listen, Chad might win with one of the other ones, but they're still all going to be around the same price. And don't you want more data indicators that say the horse is going to win than just Chad Brown? I'd rather have Chad Brown and the horse has already won off a layoff in the barn than just the one simple thing, which is Chad Brown, which everyone bets anyway.
At 100%. Absolutely could not agree more. So, yeah, there's so much. I mean, this is why the discussion on form is, I feel, the most nuanced one out of all of the kind of initial handicapping angles or elemental building blocks. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you can talk about pace pretty easily. You can talk about class. You can talk about speed. But when you get into form, there's so much nuance and there's so much, you know, variation, and there's so many nooks and crannies and exceptions and, you know, extensions on things that it really is a whole discussion unto itself that you and I could spend an hour talking about it and we still wouldn't even scratch the surface.
Well, let's try and scratch the surface on some of these races here. Let's try and talk some form. Let's try and get some ideas with the turf here going. But the first race we're going to talk about is the Grade 3 Peter Pan. It was race 6 from Belmont at the Big A. We are going a mile and an eighth on the dirt. And this is a race for me that I was actually helped out by scratches. I like Tuscan Gold. I don't know how much I like Tuscan Gold at 2-1, but obviously Catching Freedom won that last race out of the LA Derby. I'm kind of just attached now to these fairground horses coming back. But looking through the rest of the race, you know, a horse like Deterministic, and this is one that I think a lot of other people jumped onto as well. Yes, great win in the Gotham off a sloppy track. Like, it's not a sloppy track as much on Saturday, and it is a completely different track. It's fine when you're playing sloppy track races and it's at the same type of track. For me, once all the scratches happened, I just kind of looked through. Listen, the Wine Steward, great horse. Back-to-back 92s. The rest before that was an 86. Slowly improving horses. I should love these type of horses, and I usually do bet them, but didn't win the last time out. And listen, one lost the favorite when they lose by less than a length. Now we're talking kind of, you know, it's more of the luck factor and, oh, they could have gone inside or outside. They missed by one step. It kind of is what it is. I thought Antiquarian at 6-1 was just such a weird spot. Looked too back, another sloppy race. Did get the W. That was the lowest buyer figure. The other two races are a little bit better, and the LA Derby was much better, running 6x4 behind Catching Freedom as well. If I like Tuscan Gold at 2-1 and that horse is scratched, I guess I have to bet the 16-1 shot that only missed by four in the same type of race. So for me, Antiquarian, just sweet and simple, at better than 4-1, I'm betting across the board. Below that, just a solid win bet.
Yeah, listen, you and I saw this pretty similarly. This was the race I was looking most forward to betting all week. And you're right. My job was made a little easier with the scratch of Tuscan Gold, who I thought looked very, very tough in this spot. But Antiquarian was number one with a bullet in this race for me. This horse had a no good, very bad experience at the Louisiana Derby, and had every excuse to run that race that he did. And actually, I thought ran better than he even looked on paper. You know, broke through the starting gate before the race started. Johnny V gets unseated and is, you know, limping around behind the gate. Then the race actually starts and he stumbles out of the gate and, you know, is forced to run really wide. And whenever you see a young horse have to expend all that energy around the far turn to kind of get up into a position, they always flatten out. And that's exactly what he did. He had every single reason to move forward here. And I just, my thing with Deterministic, and the reason I was kind of out on him, was I think he's a one-turn miler. I don't think he wants any part of two turns in this distance.
Yeah.
And if you look at his pedigree, there's a lot of sprint influence there. And I think he's more of a one turn horse, 7 furlong to a mile. So I just didn't like him. But you're right. I mean, he was a horse that was going to attract a lot of attention because of the Gotham win, because of Christophe Clement. And, you know, obviously a really good story there in the Gotham and that debut victory at Saratoga. But Antiquarian 6-1, I thought that was the clear best value. And I was going to, you know, take my shot against the Wine Steward, who I knew was going to take a lot of money, as well as a New York bred, and certainly a horse that always gives an honest effort. But just like I said, I felt the value was too good with Antiquarian.
Consensus pick of Antiquarian for myself and Matthew. Let's see if we can get it done here in the Peter Pan right now.
It did break quickly and Unique Insight right to the front with the Wine Steward, who's going to stalk from second. Antiquarian is well settled just off of them in third, three wide. At the Rail will be Protective. Rat Ortiz Jr. is towards the inside, saving ground, is in the fourth position. Then comes Native Land, and Deterministic is the early trailer, just a touch rank now, gets that kickback, is the trailer 5 lengths off the lead. Unique Insight has the lead. We'll take him to the backstretch, 23-4. The opening quarter mile right there is the Wine Steward, and perfect stalking range now within a half length of the lead. Antiquarian is three wide and protective, gets a nice journey in fourth, is only 2.5 off the leaders. Native Land continues to track from fifth, and Deterministic at the back end of the field, 5 lengths at the back. They're chasing Unique Insight at 6-1. 47-4, the half-mile time. The Wine Steward is right there for Luis Saez, ready to pounce in the two-path. Antiquarian is also engaged from third. Protective continues to save ground towards the inside as they work into the far turn now from the back. Native Land is trying to pick it up, and Deterministic has trailed throughout. And now here comes the run from the Wine Steward, is ready to challenge Unique Insight. Antiquarian is encouraged to move forward here from third. Protective is right there in fourth, in behind these leaders as they approach the top of the stretch. Deterministic, Native Land, they've got to pick it up from the back, and the Wine Steward's got the lead. The seam opens up for Protective, and now it just closes. The Wine Steward, Unique Insight, still there. Antiquarian's trying to run them both down. Protective is still looking for room. It's the Wine Steward who's fending them off. Antiquarian, now Protective is loose. It's Antiquarian towards the outside, and Antiquarian is pushed on by for John Velasquez. Antiquarian wins the Peter Pan. The Wine Steward second.
And it was Antiquarian getting the job done. 92, the winning buyer. Nice 1380 win mutual. And when you see it with a bright red circle circled on your form all week, and then you get the job done at 1380, where this horse really didn't take any money at all, you feel kind of good about these ones, don't you, Matthew?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt really good because I just played a straight win bet on this guy. And, he came through for me big time. I was shocked that I got the value I did on that bet. And Deterministic took way more money than I was even expecting. And, obviously the scratch of Tuscan Gold, you figured the Wine Store would take a lot of money. But I wasn't sure he was going to go off at 6-5, which is what he ended up going off at. But Deterministic going off at 5-2 kind of surprised me a little bit. I thought maybe 3-1 at the lowest. But the fact Antiquarian held his morning line basically and went off just a smidge under 6-1, that was a great effort and perfect, tracking trip. Johnny Velasquez knew he had the horse and, was even a little wide most of the way, but didn't matter and got the job done. So, yeah, it definitely feels good when you can cash on a horse that you really like all week.
I think in this one, too, and like you had just said, for people who aren't trip handicappers and don't do it, there's certain spots where you can at least try to watch a race, especially if you like a horse like this and broke through gate, still finished like by 4 lengths and was a long shot at 16-1. There's kind of just little things, that even if you don't watch the race, where you can kind of be like, damn, how many times do we watch them break through the gate and, they're lose by 10, 15 lengths. This one only lost by 4 lengths to a solid Derby horse that ran fourth. I just think to me that this one was kind of the steal of the weekend for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And not everybody watches replays, but I mean, you even see it on the notes. And like you said, how many times when they break through, and I'll be honest, just for full transparency, he was my pick in the Louisiana Derby that day. Yeah. I was really going to go price hunting, and I took a swing with him as my top pick. And I'll never forget watching him break through the gate and just going, well, there goes that. And so, it's one of those things. But it was validating a little bit to see him come back and run so well here, because I think he is a really talented horse. It certainly sounded like he's going to be headed to the Belmont Stakes now in his next race.
What's one of the next race of the pod? Race number 7 from Belmont at the Big A. It's the Grade 2 Man of War, 1 3/8 miles on the turf. Let's start off with you, Matthew. What'd you like in this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the two Appleby horses, they certainly both looked really tough. And, both have excellent form. Nation's Pride has, won over the surface up here in New York before and winning that Jockey Club Derby Invitational back at the Belmont at the Big A meet back in September of 2022. But, there's a horse that, it's coming off a little bit of a layoff, pretty significant layoff, hadn't run since November. So I'm always a little bit more skeptical of those horses as opposed to his stablemate Silver Knot, who came back off of the layoff and won here in North America and has largely just been exclusively racing in North America for Charlie Appleby, and won that Elkhorn last time out. And I thought he looked really tough in this spot. You get Flavian Pratt, who's been on fire during the early parts of this meet, up on the mountain. He just looked really good. I thought presented better value certainly the Nation's Pride at 8-5, and Silver Knot at the 3-1 morning line price was, I thought, a lot more interesting, especially considering that this was a race a turf marathon race in New York, where there actually looked to be a little bit of pace because of So High being in the race. Mm-hmm. That's a horse that likes to go out and kind of be a rabbit in some of these races. So, for me, it was the other Appleby in this particular spot. And I was also a little bit interested in the two inside horses, both Ohana Honor at 6-1 for Shug McGahee. I'm always a sucker for Shug McGahee horses on the turf. And this one, I like to see his versatility last time out where he went and wired the field, granted very slow fractions. And I knew he wasn't going to be able to do that again, but still it was good to see him get the job done. And then the Christophe Clement first time or second timer in North America, Cortez at 5-1. I thought that was a kind of an interesting horse with Rosario up as well. And depending on how strung out the field got, I thought, maybe he could come with a closing kick. So those were kind of the three horses, Silver Knot, Ohana Honor, and Cortez that I was kind of identifying in this race.
I'll kind of start off. I like two of your three. The one that I also liked, I'd like Tawny Park a little bit, 6-1. I ride up grade two place twice, Sycamore. The Sycamore and the Bowling Green were the two bad races, but obviously Pan American and McDermott, both two really good races, just missed as a favorite against, as you said, Cortez. I just thought with this one, the figures looked kind of good, and also always coming out that mile and 3/8 race, two back with a 98, fits this race, I thought, quite well. Obviously, we're talking about different turf courses here. For me, I kind of had the same idea as you, Silver Knot. You look two back, just missed out against Program Trading, which, oh, by the way, won as well. Recently, and I just feel looking at Silver Knot 3-1, I'm now becoming more of a Pratt fan, and I always was one, but I really think that he is just one of the, like, I think he's a top three in the country. I think he just does everything so well. Appleby now, I feel like we had talked about it off the air, but it's almost now turning into the other Appleby horse at this point because he's always running two or three in a race, so the other Chad. I would love to see that meme made on the internet, but for me, Silver Knot, Tawny Port were going to be my two uses. Ohana Honor was right there as well with that 98 in that allowance race at 6-1 as well for Kendrick from the inside. I thought there was a lot of interesting ways to go here. Listen, Nation's Pride, 104 last time out before the Bahrain race, and that was off of a yielding course. And I think a lot of times people look at the 104 in the hundreds, which was even farther back than that, and I think that 104 was just a big dagger for everyone. Yielding turf is not good turf, and I think that if people had realized, it was more wet that day than it was today, I just think that this horse at 8-5 showed minimal value at the morning line. I just thought Silver Knot and Tawny Port were going to be good ideas for me. Any ideas for you on Tawny Port before we get to the race replay?
As a horse, I love Tawny Port. He's a cool horse because this is a Kentucky Derby runner who has now remade himself as a really legitimately good turf horse. Mm-hmm. And I thought he has a very even running style. Has Irata, like you said, he would be a horse that I would be using in all my verticals. He doesn't necessarily win a ton, but man, he's always there. He reminds me a little bit of some of the horses that we talked about a little bit earlier in the pod.
Agree so much there with you. Getting into the race replay, Silver Knot, Tawny Port for me. Silver Knot, a little bit of Cortez and Ohana Honor from a man, Matthew. Let's see who gets it done here in the Man of War right now.
Off quickly with So High, and So High right towards the front, but here comes the Godolphin pair. They're going to be part of the early action. Nation's Pride has worked from the outside draw, has gotten immediately into the two path, is going to stalk this pace setter. So High, the long shot, and the favorite Nation's Pride, they're 1-2 into that first turn. Then behind them, Silver Knotly up front, just settling into second now. Nation's Pride, that opening quarter was 24 seconds flat. Silver Knot is comfortable enough, is in third. Very strung out here in the early stages. In the fourth spot is going to be Ohana Honor. And behind Ohana Honor comes Tawny Port. Towards the back, Harry Hood. Then Cortez towards the tail end of the field there with Rock and Roll and Greek Order. They're chasing So High. So High. Romero Mirage has got the lead. Just like he likes to do, his front-running style, 48 seconds flat for that half-mile time. Nation's Pride is now well settled here, is just backing off of this pace setter, is just settling in, is in the second position with Silver Knot just right in behind him. The front three are 4.5 lengths clear from Ohana Honor, who's right there in fourth as they work to the backstretch. In behind, Ohana Honor is still. Tawny Port is in the fifth position as they start to close in on So High. From the back, Harry Hood starts a rally with Cortez in Greek Order. His second to last, Rocket and Roll is the trailer. 113.48 for 3/4 mile. It's So High at 43-1, trying to take them all the way in the Man of War. Here comes Nation's Pride, just starts to move in closer, is back to within 2 of the leader. Silver Knot has been not asked yet. Silver Knot moves into the far turn, has been comfortable throughout, is tracking in third. Ohana Honor gets the hurry up. Tawny Port, same. Also there comes Cortez, who's still 8 lengths off the leader as they reach the top of the lane. And here comes Nation's Pride to the outside of So High, who's all in. Nation's Pride, but Silver Knot is ready to pounce, and Silver Knot has taken the lead. Nation's Pride is trying to stick with his entry mate, but here comes the opening up of Silver Knot. The Godolphin pair are clearly 1-2. Ohana Honor is run up into third. But no doubt, Flavien Prat, a beautiful trip, and it's going to be Silver Knot to win the Man of War.
And it is Silver Knot getting the job done. 10-20, the winning mutual. Looking at a buyer figure of 106. I mean, just when you look through this race and you see how good this horse can run at 4-1, Nation's Pride doesn't run off the track. I mean, third, but under even money is kind of an ugly way to look at it. Tawny Port ran fourth, solid runner for that one. Ohana Honor at a big price ran second, and I think that's where we can start talking about this race recap. Just what a good race by a horse that I think so many people, when they look through the condition book and they see these N2Xs, and I don't think they realize how important it is. When they win an N2X, it's almost like a listed stake at this point, if they don't feel the listed stake, because there's not many N2Xs left here in the condition book. Unless if you see those 62, you know, with the conditions on it for the claiming level, I thought this horse at 6-1 that floated up to 11-1 showed a lot in this race, and I'm really excited to see what this horse can do next time out.
Yeah, and this is another one, you know, going back to our discussion about form. Look at this horse's form coming back from the brief layoff that he had from 3 to 4 years old. And we always talk about the kind of maturation, particularly the turf horses, from 3 to 4 years old. We saw it with a horse you mentioned earlier, Program Trading.
Yeah.
We saw that maturation. And here we see it again. This is a horse that was running high 80s, low 90s buyer speed figures at the best, comes back from a little bit of a freshening, runs a 97 on the Tapita, and then backs it up with a 98 in that N2X allowance. Like you said, this is a horse that you clearly get a sense has turned the corner and has kind of gone up to another level. I thought ran a really nice race and was a horse, because of how much money Nation's Pride took, really floated up and went up from that 6-1 morning line all the way up to 11-1 by post time, and became, I think, a very attractive bet to make in those exactas trifectas, because at that price, you just knew you were going to get a really strong effort. So, you know, he's third back in the form cycle. And like I said, I'm always a sucker for Shug McGahee horses. So that kind of played in my hands a little bit there.
I think the main thing we can talk to about too is obviously we've had two races, two quote unquote, you know, bad favorites, give or take. But Nation's Pride at 4-5. I know that I've talked about how I make an odds line, et cetera, stuff like that. If you look through this race and you think, okay, if the race gets run 100 times at this at these odds, I mean, Ohana Honor's going to win a couple at that big price of 10-1. Nation's Pride's supposed to win 50% of these races. I understand that, like, you know, Tawny Port's still a little bit off. But out of those three horses, you think this horse is going to win 50% of the time? I just can't see, especially with how good Silver Knot ran.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be honest, I was a little surprised. I mentioned the horse So High before the race. And that was a horse that, you know, if you remember last year, went out and opened up by 12 lengths in a grade one race and has no problem just going out and setting ridiculous early numbers in these turf marathons. And when I looked at the early fractions in this race and they were going 24-48, my initial thought was Frankie Dettori had Nation's Pride way too close to the pace, to be honest. And I just didn't like where that horse was positioned. And I liked that Silver Knot was a little further back. And, you know, I know it's a very delicate balance for jockeys when you have a horse like so high in the race. How far out do you let them get? You don't want to let them get away and give you the slip. But at the same time, you have to have an internal clock to know I may be going a little too fast with my horse, and I might not have quite as much left for that last half furlong to hold everybody off as a result. So that was one where I just, you know, I just really liked going back to your point about Flavian Pratt. Just really loved the ride that Pratt gave Silver Knot. I thought he was in the perfect position sitting third and far enough from the pace that he wasn't going to be affected late in the race.
Ohana Honor probably won't be 10 to 1 in the next race, but that's one I have circled. Nation's, Nation's Pride for me, probably one that, not that Frankie's, you know, I won't see a jockey change, but definitely I want to see Frankie switch up the ride in that race. Let's move on to the last race of this podcast. Race number 9 from Belmont with the Big A. It's a 62 optional N2X allowance, 1/116 miles on the turf. I'm just going to start off real quick. I only liked one. I like two in here. I lied. Two. We'll start with Ocean Atlantique for Michael Maker. How you say you're a Shug guy? I am very much a Michael Maker guy. Ever since watching all these horses that he used to win with over at Arlington Park, you know, he'd claim them, they'd win two stake races, and they'd go off into the sunset. Just one of my favorite trainers overall. I'm going to go back with the JK Special here, closing off of a slow pace with a solid 91 there at a big price of 11-1. I thought he was going to kind of come into this race. He had run higher figures. If you cut all of those synthetic races out, he ran 97, 94, all those way back in these type of races, even a little bit stronger, 150 optional allowance races. But the other one I was going to use for sure, Running with Scissors, one of my favorites. I just think if you look back through, was racing at Gulfstream Park, had a solid 89 against the fast pace at a good price of 8-1. Listen, he's 2-for-4 at Belmont at Aqueduct. He's 2-for-2 at the distance in the Exacta. And the optional 62 he ran 4 back at an 85, I thought fit really solidly into this race. It wasn't so much that I was against Bologna in these horses, but just I don't want these horses that are coming from so far back in this type of race. And also we have, you know, the coupled entry type idea. And listen, I know how much people don't like coupled entries. I think they're kind of, now that I've been in the game longer, I realize why I don't think they're the best for racing. Cause you know, one has the best chance. And listen, Dancing with the Stars off a long layoff with a 91, one nothing to do with the Chad Brown. If I was going to take one, would have been Balloony, but I thought Running with Scissors and Ocean Antelique were kind of the ones I wanted to go with in this one. What about you, Matthew?
Yeah, so I'll start with your final point about the coupled entries. And I think that's always a concern you have with a horse like Balloony, who is a really nice horse, and there's nothing wrong with that horse at all. But you just know you're not going to get 8-5. These coupled entries are going to take more price. And going back to what you said earlier about Nation's Pride, you just kind of go, what's the percentage chance of this horse winning this race out of 100 times? And you know, Balloony's a nice horse, but if you go, well, this horse is probably going to take money from 8-5, and then how do I really feel about this horse's chances overall? I get it, being a little hesitant there. For me, there were also two horses, one that we agreed on, one that was a little bit different, but, you know, Running with Scissors, I'll start with the one that we agreed on, the New York bred, just a really cool horse. I mean, sick going into a 60th career race, and it's just an amazing horse that shows you how horses can have new careers. And there's a horse that was running in kind of claiming races and, you know, state bred optional claimers at, you know, on the dirt, and then kind of got switched to the turf and really late in his career. And suddenly as an 8-year-old has found kind of new life and has been running really good races and second back from a pretty significant layoff, but came back in that first effort off the bench and ran one of his best speed figures that you've seen in probably over almost a year, running that 89 buyer. So you figure there's going to be a little bit of an additional boost from that. You get Joel Rosario on the mount. Joel on the turf is always going to be dangerous with the type of rides that he can give. Such a strong rider down the stretch. So definitely like Running with Scissors. And then the other one I'll just mention was Bodie's Maker at 8-1, number 8 horse for Horatio DePaz. Kind of another horse that's had a little bit of kind of muddied form in terms of running a lot on the dirt and running on the turf, but always seems really honest on the turf. 10-for-13 in the Exacta. Some of those, granted, were coming at slightly lower levels, but I just have a lot of respect for Horatio as a horseman and kind of how he brings his horses along. It's sometimes a little worrying to see a horse going for the tag in these optional claiming races, but considering he claimed the horse for $30,000, there's an economic side to this game as well. And, you know, it's certainly coming off a win last time out in an optional claiming 32, stepping up a little bit from Laurel. And I just thought this horse had some figures that made him interesting. So running with Scissors and Bodie's Maker for me.
And for myself, Ocean Antelique and Running with Scissors as my top choices. Let's see who gets it done here in the optional claimer right now.
Picking inward was Con Man towards the inside. Speed from Running with Scissors in the early mix, and Con Man's up in the early fray as well. There's Magical Waves from In Between Horses. They are lined up six across the course. Looking for a spot as American Law. Bodie's Maker is now towards the tail end there, as that's going to be Bellouni who's joining that front parade. As it's towards the inside, it's Con Man, and Con Man Dylan Davis now with a neck in front. In Between Horses, Ocean Atlantique, and American Law is tracking three wide. At the rail, Magical Ways takes back Bellouni, cornering very wide. About five wide there around the turn is in fifth, and Bellouni wants to progress and moves forward for Flavien Pratt. Is now tracking in the shared fourth position. Further back, Running with Scissors is about to challenge and take fifth. Magical Ways is now back to sixth, and behind that is Dancing in Denial in seventh. Danzig with the Stars is in eighth, and the trailer, that's Bodie's Maker. They're chasing Con Man. Con Man's got the lead, 23.37 for that opening quarter mile. 48-1 for the half-mile time. Big long shot in American Law is stalking from second. Ocean Atlantique gets a nice journey towards the inside, saving ground. Luis Saez and Ocean Atlantique right there in the third spot to the inside of Bellouni, who's now more well-settled in fourth. Magical Ways needs a way through. Same can be said for Running with Scissors. They're bottled up in between horses. Here comes the run from Danzig. With the Stars is launching out wider. From the back, Dancing in Denial and Bodie's Maker. Very tightly bunched, 113 flat. For three quarters of a mile, they're still chasing Con Man. Con Man's got the lead at the top of the lane. It's Con Man. Ocean Atlantique needs that running room. Bellouni is ready to pounce, and here comes the run from Bellouni towards the outside, and Bellouni is pushed on by. Running with Scissors is unleashed, and here comes Rosario and Running with Scissors after the leader, Bellouni. It's Running with Scissors who's trying to open up now. Running with Scissors, Bellouni, Ocean Atlantique still in behind horses. Running with Scissors, Joel Rosario gets another one.
And Running with Scissors does get the job done. 93, the winning buyer. 1280, the winning mutual. I will bring this point up with your runner, Bodie's Maker, who ran fourth at 19-1. And you brought up the economic side. And I can't tell you how many times if people can just turn off their brain and just think like a trainer would, or in the claiming game, how it's not just about wins and losses. It's also about how you move. The fact that this horse won last time and they bring him up and he's in for the tag just screamed to me. The horse is going to run, possibly hit the board, but this horse should get claimed because it was in good form and it won last time out. And just seemed like such a shrewd move by a good claiming barn that just knows how to kind of bounce back and forth, you know, between Laurel and these other, you know, parks race courses, and then bring them up. And instead of, you know, listen, if you claim for 30 and they get claimed back for 62 and the horse does okay by hitting the board, you're making a pretty penny there. So, I couldn't agree more with you with Bodie's Maker. Didn't make my ticket, but ran a solid fourth there. But again, me and you, Running with Scissors, 93 buyer. Just something else that I wanted to bring up with you, and we talked about form and stuff. This horse likes to win. This horse has raced 60
yes.
times. And a lot of times people don't look at, like, they look at that box and they just, I don't know, people just don't know what it does or what it means. When a horse has more wins than underneath finishes, I would imagine if you have a horse's, well, let's say 15 is the sample. I would imagine that you probably find two or three on a race card that have more wins than underneath finishes. That's how hard it is to do this. This horse knows where the line is, and you got paid $10 plus on this horse. Just what a cool horse, and just what a... I'm not going to say it was an easy race, but Bellouni at 4-5, runs second. Ocean Antelique at 3-1. I mean, this horse was, you know, third, fourth choice, and if you're beating the public's top two, you're going to make money at this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, what I was concerned about ended up happening with the coupled entry taking a lot of money and kind of going back to your discussion about, you know, Nation's Pride in the previous race. And it's like, do you really trust Bellouni to win this race over 50 times out of 100? Absolutely not. So, you know, as good as the horse is, I just had a hard time supporting at that price. And yeah, you know, Rosario, I thought, gave a really smart ride on Running with Scissors, who does have good early speed, but kind of knew that a few horses would probably go out up front, and did a great job at getting that horse to sit mid-pack and just be in a perfect position. You saw what a strong finish he was able to make. You mentioned the increased buyer speed figure from last time out. Again, second off the bench, an even better effort. And so looks like running with scissors kind of, you know, I'll be interested to see kind of where he runs again next. And, yeah, you know, you can make a really good living running in, you know, another, you know, 10, 15, 20 races in his career as an 8-year-old, potentially, you know, going into 9 years old next year. So it's just a really cool story, a really cool horse. And you're right, finding those horses who know where to find the finish line and have done it on different surfaces, at different distances, at different tracks, it just shows you that form travels. And that's the other part about form, I guess, that we didn't really touch on, is seeing that it travels from track to track, from surface to surface, from distance to distance. Some horses just like to win, and he's one of them.
And I will say this, I just looked down there. Only one horse claimed in this race, Ocean Antelique, was claimed. Bodie's Maker did make about $6,000 for that fourth place finish. So, I mean, claim for 30, now you're running this horse, pop the van, you know, and all the training costs. But, I mean, $6,000 for a ship up to New York isn't absolutely terrible in that aspect. I'm going to be a little bit different in this race, I think, going forward. If Baloney is anywhere near 5-2 or 2-1, I'm not saying he will be, but losing like this as a short-priced horse, sometimes they will float back up.
Yeah.
I think I'll take this horse at 5-2 next time. Unless if there's another running with scissors type, I think this horse is slowly improving each and every race. Usually after that third race, they don't tend to improve more. It's just kind of, this is what their form cycle is. But take this horse out of a coupled entry, make him 2-1, 5-2, and have a horse like Ocean Antelique be like the only other horse and not a running with scissors. And 5-2 could be a really good price on this horse next time out.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. And I think that's something that players need to sometimes divorce themselves from, both positively and negatively. You know, I'll just go back to a horse that we talked about earlier. I loved Antiquarium in the, you know, we both did. We both loved Antiquarium in the Peter Pan. That doesn't mean I'm going to use Antiquarium in the Belmont Stakes. I mean, you got to take all this stuff into consideration. And just because you're against a horse in one race doesn't mean you have to stay against the horse the next time out. You know, you have to take into all consideration all these other factors and, you know, what the other field might look like. And then to your point, what the final price is going to end up being. Because, yeah, if Baloney was even 5-1 on Saturday, I'd probably have fired away with a win bet. But, you know, if you can get that price next time out, and people go, well, you know, he lost as a favorite. And, you know, some, you're right, sometimes they float back up a little bit. I definitely see that as one that I would use in the future and kind of going to be interested to see what type of field he ends up in next time.
One of the best jobs I've ever had, obviously, whether it's doing the podcast, but I was a part of the bet squad at Saratoga. And I can't tell you how many people I would help. And they'd come back every race if I would win. But then I wouldn't find a winner for them. And it would be obviously a bigger odds horse, like 8-1. And I just wish that people would understand that in this game, if it's a 10-race card, you only have to hit 3 races a day, even with those shorter-priced horses, and you're still going to lose 7 of them. This game is so much about finding spots and not so much about, listen, everybody wants to play every race. At Saratoga, I play, when I'm up with Pete and the gang and that, I'll play probably 4 or 5 races a day because I just like to talk and enjoy stuff up there, and I kind of have my handicapping done ahead of time. Yeah. But if I'm at the OTB and stuff and I'm hanging out with a bunch of guys and friends, I'm usually crashing every single race there. It'll be for a lot less money, but I just wish people, when they come in here, and listen, everybody who's a newbie and wants to come in there and, you know, hit a pick 6 and hit a pick 5, this game is so hard to find just 2 winners on a card. And I just wish that people would understand going forward, like, when you see people's picks online and, you know, obviously, you know, we have everyone who, you know, oh, what's your percentage? Oh, you're, you know, 22%, you suck. Well, they could have a better ROI than the guy who's hitting 35%. And I think that's one of the things in when you look at DRF, you know, David Litfin was such a guy for Naira for such a long time. And he was a very, you know, I'm not going to say he was chalky, but I mean, he was 33% on his picks a lot of the time. Yeah. A lot of them were shorter price horses. Now we have a guy like Mike Beer over there who does, you know, he hits the 8-1, 10-1 shots a bunch. He hits for a lower percentage. And I think if people just really understood what ROI and what a hit rate was, the game would become easier for them because they could understand, I'm okay if I'm losing. It also just comes down to bankroll management, which we all know everyone here struggles with as much as the next person.
I could not agree more. I joked with my friend the other day, the old phrase that if you fail 70% of the time, they put you in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, the best hitters in baseball fail 70% of the time. The best handicappers are going to be wrong between 70% and 80% of the time. And it's when you're right and knowing the types of horses you want to go after. And I can't tell you the number of times, and it's interesting, on Naira Bets, I actually have a handicapping and I think a betting 101 page where I actually kind of laid this out. And I picked a real day that took place at Saratoga this past summer. And I said, if you were a chalk player, if you just like to play favorites, you would have won three races, but you would have been down 22% for the day.
Yeah.
And then I said, but let's say you had a friend who was kind of like to play mid-price horses, you know, 9-2, 5-1, 7-2 type of horses, not quite the favorite, but second, third choices. Well, that friend would have hit two winners on the day and would have actually broken even, but would have won only 20% of the races. And then you have one friend who just plays bombs, and that friend hit one race on the day, but would have been up 16%. So yeah. You just, again, it goes back to bankroll management to your point, but you can't get too obsessed with picking the most number of winners. You have to be focused on what's your ROI. And when you do, you know, go all in on some of those races where you have strong opinions.
I think there is not a better spot to end the podcast with that. I do want to thank my special guest, Matthew DeSantis, for coming on, talking all things Belmont at the Big A. Wow, that is still a mouthful, no matter what, when you say it. Thank you so much for coming on, man. What do we have to look forward to this weekend with you over at Naira?
Yeah, obviously got a lot of Preakness content up on Naira Bets, but have a lot of great stuff looking at full field rundowns for the Preakness, but also full stakes analysis for Black Eyed Susan Day and for the Preakness Day, as well as stakes analysis taking place this weekend at Belmont at the Big A. And then also getting ready, and I say this with all sincerity and all of my heart, for one of my favorite tracks that's starting up next Monday, Assiniboia Downs. We're going to have a lot of content for you on Naira Bets for that, because that's a really fun early week, late night track to be following, I think, over the summer.
I was thinking of so many tracks. That one was not even on the periphery. But thank you so much, Matthew, for coming on. Really appreciate it. We'll talk soon, all right?
All right. Thanks so much, Spencer.
I want to thank everyone who listens to this podcast and the rest of the podcast on the In the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Matthew DeSantis, for coming on, talking all things Naira with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Fornatal. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl. We will see you next time.